Let us open our Bibles to Luke chapter 10, verse 30 to verse 35. This is one of the most famous parables, famous stories in the Bible. Luke chapter 10, verse 30 to verse 35. Let us read. I'll read from the NASB 95 version. Jesus replied and said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among robbers. And they stripped him and beat him and went away, leaving him half dead." Verse 31, "And by chance, a priest was going down on that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side." That means he crossed to the other side. Verse 33, "Likewise, a Levite also, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side." Verse 33, "But a Samaritan who was on a journey came upon him, and when he saw him, he felt compassion." Verse 34, "And came to him and bandaged up his wounds, pouring oil and wine on them. And he put him on his own beast and brought him to an inn and took care of him." And the last verse, "On the next day, he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper and said, 'Take care of him, and whatever more you spend, when I return, I will repay you.'" In this story, the legal expert viewed the wounded man as a topic for discussion. To the bandits, to the robbers, the wounded man was a victim to be exploited. To the priest, the wounded man was a problem to avoid. And to the temple assistant, to him, the victim was an object of curiosity. Only the Samaritan treated him as a person to love. From this parable, we learn 3 principles about loving our neighbor. First, lack of love is often easy to justify, even though it is never right. We can always justify, we can always give excuse for not loving a person. Maybe his attitude, maybe his character, or maybe his personality. But it is never right. Second principle is that our neighbor is anyone of any race, creed, or social background who is in need. And thirdly, love means acting to meet the person's need. Brothers and sisters, wherever you live, people in need are close by. They may be your workers, they may be your helpers, they may be beggars on the street. Don't cross to the other side when you meet them. And that is the title of my sharing this morning. Don't cross to the other side. And there are 3 very important points that I want to share with you this morning. Number 1 is the seeing eyes. Number 2 is the shape of love. And number 3 is the soul that keeps. So easy to remember: the seeing eyes, the shape of love, and the soul that keeps. A week ago, I had the privilege to go to Hong Kong. I was telling Pastor Tony, Pastor Lee, some of the stories, it was funny. That was from January 31 to February 6. So I had the privilege to go with a group to Hong Kong. There are about 16 of us who went there, and from different churches. Many were Baptist, and I was the separatist. You know, other churches call evangelists separatists. Don't you know that? They call us elitists because we don't usually join them for some reasons, of course. Some reasons. But that separatist name, nickname for us, is slowly fading. Because I really tried my best to show them that we are not bad. We are not bad. We are just careful. We are just careful. So by the grace of God, I found and I met many pastors, and I can see that they are good. They are okay. They are not perfect, but they are okay. So the purpose of us going to Hong Kong was not for a pleasure, but of course pleasure was included. But the purpose was to comply with our learning on international mission. So overall, it was a wonderful trip. I get to learn how to mingle with others and see some churches which are quite different from ours. Our DNA is different from them. Let me show you one example. When they pray, I don't know if they were speaking in tongues or they pray in Koreans, but it's like this, all right? This is not to ridicule them. It's like this. And then the leader will suddenly say, "Bah!" And then another time, "Bah!" For three times. That is their culture, maybe. That is Korean way of praying. So what my friend, my pastor, the leader of this group told me, "Why don't we do it in our church?" No, I said, "No." "No, I will not do that. I will not do that. That is their culture. And we have our own." Okay? But despite those, I also saw sincerity in what they do. You know, when we went there, the president of the organization met us. He was wearing coat and tie. He was wearing suit. He met us and brought us to eat in a restaurant. We ate Chinese food. And he even interacted with us, even though he couldn't really speak English, but he has this app on the cell phone that translates his Korean language to Tagalog. From Korean language to Tagalog. So when he speaks in Korean, he will do, and then he will show us. So we responded, and funny thing was that some of my friends, some of my companions, they said, because they learn Korean language in that church. So when he was asked, "Do you know to speak Korean?" He said, "Yes, I can speak Korean." So the president was like confident. "All right, since you know the Korean." So the president tried to converse with him in Korean, but then he tanga. Maybe he's like a parrot, you know, a parrot. A parrot can only speak what you teach it. Di ba? But to converse with you, the parrot cannot do it. Right? So he was like a parrot. He was like tanga, and then didn't know how to respond to the Korean. And then before we left the Philippines, weeks before that, we were invited to sing a special number. Okay, because Koreans believe that Filipinos can sing. So we decided maybe 3 or 4 weeks before we left to practice to sing a song. And the song they chose was "In the Service of the King." In the service of the King. That is the only part I know. In the service of the King. But then, a few days before we left, they changed it to "How Great Thou Art." "How Great Thou Art." So on the Sunday service in a Korean church, of course, before we left also, our leader or the pastor of the church said, "Can you sing two special numbers?" So there was no more song because we couldn't even memorize the song "In the Service of the King." So we changed it to "How Great Thou Art." So I said, "Pastor, is it okay if I sing the song that I wrote? Ilonggo song." So the pastor, the leader said, "Okay, you just give us the translation of your song." So I had the privilege to sing the "Ikaw ang Ambahanon Ko." So that song already reached Hong Kong. But translated in English, one of my companions, while I was singing, she said, "Pastor, I was really touched by the song. The whole time you were singing, I was just crying." Because I explained to them, I said, "I wrote this song during the pandemic, where people like lost their song because they couldn't come to church. So I was inspired to write this song. God, you are my song." So I sang that song. And of course, the second song that we sang was "How Great Thou Art." And I don't want to say anything. I don't want to say anything. But we finished the song. And then, another thing, we were also invited to sing another song for the conference itself. And in that conference, there were Chinese, there were Americans, there were Koreans, and us, Filipinos. So, they decided last minute, why don't we sing this song in Tagalog? Mahal na mahal kita, Panginoon. Have you heard that? Mahal. And the action was terrible. Mahal na mahal kita, Panginoon. They want to sing that song. I wanted to avoid participating because I don't want to. Mahal na mahal. I don't want to dance. But then, God was so gracious. They don't have accompaniment. they don't have minus one. So, I will play the guitar. I will play the guitar. I will not sing. I will not dance. So we practice hard. But then we had problem. They cannot sing together and they cannot dance together. So one day before the presentation, I told them, if we cannot dance together and cannot sing together because of our dancing, why don't we just sing this song in a slow mode? So that there's no need for us to do some actions. But then our leader said, never mind, we scrape that song. Because anyway, it's in Tagalog, they cannot understand. Well, I said, the Koreans also preach, the Koreans also give special number, and in Korean language, but they have English interpretation. But our leader said, no, we don't sing that song, so we had to submit. And last minute, he said, we will sing the song. The title is, "We Will Stand." You're my brother, you're my sister, take me by the hand. Something like that. That is the song. And I don't feel like singing. I didn't feel like singing. I really, because we did not practice. And our audience were Americans, Koreans, Chinese. When you hear the Koreans sing, I tell you, it's like, they were really good. There were just 12 of them. And they sang 4 voices. So while they were singing, before we sang, I said, no, I don't have the face. I don't have the guts to sing. I really didn't want. But in the end, I joined them. For our leader's sake, I have to submit. I must submit, even though I didn't like. I have to submit. Thankfully, I stood behind. I was behind. And the leader said, Pastor, we cannot memorize the song. But our leader said, don't worry, there is a television in front. We can see the lyrics. But when we stood in front, where's the television? Where's the lyrics? So no choice, we had to use our cell phone to sing. And the best part is that we were all wearing uniforms, costumes some more. It was the costumes that boost our singing. We wear black, and then they had the blazer, and I was wearing the bomber shirt, the bomber jacket. And we had that uniform inside. And while we were singing, I tell you, sa kaluoy sang Diyos. Natapos gid man. By God's mercy, I know it was God's mercy, you know, to support us, the Koreans, while we were singing, "You're my brothers." What they did was, "You're my brothers." They were clapping their hands. So that was really an experience for me. But as I said, generally it was good, right? And some of my companions, while we were singing, they were so confident in singing. So after that, I said, "I'm not going to sing with you guys again." When it cannot pass, my standard is not very high. When it cannot pass my standard, I will not sing. So in my mind, I was asking, why can't they just gauge themselves properly? Estimate yourself. It was quite difficult for me to say, never mind, just forgive and forget. So I said, no, if you ever sing again, I will not join your group. If this is the performance, I will not join your group. I am separatist. So let me bring you to my first point today. That is just to pull our legs. First point today is the seeing eyes. The seeing eyes. In verse 31, it says, "And by chance, a priest was going down on that road." The priests on that day were like the politicians today, or the politicians of their day. Okay? The priest called the shots and controlled the people. Perhaps this priest that saw the victim looked at him by the side of the road and thought, "That lazy welfare dependent has no one to blame but himself for being there in the mud." It's like our attitude sometimes. It is your fault why you are like that. Don't blame others, don't blame me. Why you are poor, it's because of yourself. It's your fault. Or maybe the priest could say, "Why you try to help yourself?" Sometimes you also behave like that. Okay? "I try to pull my socks. I strive. I really did my best. That's why I'm like this." So if you're like that, it's your problem. Is that how we feel? Do we see people lying on the street who have been beat up by the enemy and think, "Serves them right. Serves you right." You know, in Numbers chapter 19, it tells us there that if a priest touched a dead man, he would be unclean for 7 days. But that man was not dead. He was still alive. Even if he touched him, he is not unclean. So perhaps this priest was saying, "Oh, I have other ministries to tend to. I have other things to do. I cannot afford a delay. My schedule is too full. My demands are too high." Maybe that priest was on his way to the temple to serve, and he did not stop. And even though the Levites, they are like the social workers of our day. After a closer look, this Levite crossed to the other side as well. Maybe he was worried that this guy is a decoy to lure travelers, and he would be the next victim if he stopped. He would be vulnerable to attackers. Maybe that's what the Levite said. Or in our ordinary interpretation, we say, "The priest did not do it gani, ako pa." See? The word "saw," S-A-W, is repeated 3 times in this parable. Some translation is "look." Okay? "Look" or "saw." Each of the passerbys in this parable saw with his eyes Three of them saw a half-dead man. Saw is eidu in Greek, which means to see, perceive, notice, discern, or discover. It also means to know, get knowledge of, and understand. It means the priest, the Levite, and the Samaritan saw and knew what happened. They understood the situation. They had knowledge, and they noticed. There is a quite popular children's song, children's Sunday school song, based actually on biblical principles of guarding one's heart and mind, which Jesus was teaching in Matthew chapter 6, verse 22 to 23. And the phrase of this song is, "Oh, be careful, little eyes, what you see. Oh, be careful, little eyes, what you see." Okay, many children know this song, but I have my own version of this song. "Oh, be careful, little eyes, how you see. Oh, be careful, little eyes, how you see." What we see around us affect our walk and our talk. How we see people affects our dealings and our feelings. Like, for example, if a beggar knock on your door, would you open? If you know he is a beggar? Or if Mayor Trañas knocks on your door, will you open? See, our feelings are affected. Our dealings are affected because of how we see people. Sa una, or before, even sometimes until now, when I see beggars coming to me and rushing, my thought is always like, why don't you go home? Like when I see children on the streets begging, which our government discourage us to give them, or else they will stay on the streets and beg. Okay? So every time children come to me, I always ask, where are your parents? Where are your parents? You should be at home. You know, before, whenever I see etas, mga ate, begging, I would always say, why don't you go back? You are like an eyesore. You know, it affects the beauty of the city. My mentality was like that. But when I got to know, I personally got to know them, every time I see them on the street, I pity them. They were once the owner of this land. But because they were ignorant, they sold the land to strangers. And I managed to talk to one of their leaders. He is a pastor, Pastor Jesse Ilocendo. Pastor Jesse Ilocendo told me everything about the ate. Now, because of that, whenever I see the etas on the street, I don't despise them anymore. Because I know what they went through. I know what they're going through. They are in a situation that they couldn't even help themselves. Somebody said this, build a longer table, not a higher fence. Build a longer table, not a higher fence. You know, some people, they cut the table short by being exclusive. This is just for this group. This is just for our group. You don't belong here. That is why many of us feel OP, out of place. And there are also people who find it difficult to flow because they really feel out. And let us admit it, brothers and sisters. I also want to admit, we were once, or we once felt out of place. When I first came to Evangel in 1987, I also felt out of place. That is why many people wonder why I sit behind. Why I didn't want to talk to anyone? I felt out of place. I felt young. Okay? I felt that I didn't know what to do. We felt once like that, out of place. But we also have the tendency to make people feel out of place. We build higher fences because of how we see people. We often cast doubts over someone who comes to us, whether they are begging or asking for favor or asking for help. That's why I said I was also guilty of that. Why? Because of this truth. We don't see God in that person. One of the speakers in the conference asked us, "Do you see God in a sinner?" Some people said, "Of course, no, he's a sinner." But I said, "Yes." Why? He is still created in God's image. The church in general is suffering from disunity. There is no unity in the church because of what our eyes cannot see in others. We cannot see God in others. This word koinonia, the Greek word for fellowship, will happen only when we see God's image in that person. You will never flow, you will never be with a person you don't like. You will never go with a person where you don't see God in him. But when we see God's image in him, you can. You know, some of us, when we meet people with bad character, like maybe criminals committed crime, we feel that God is not with them anymore, or we feel that God is not in them anymore. We have pets at home. Some of our pets are really good, but no matter how good our pets are, there is no God in them. That makes us humans, no matter how frailty we are, we still have God's image in us. So whenever you see someone, you walk across the street, you see a beggar, please see God in them. Let us ask ourselves these questions. How do we look at a brother? How do we look at a brother or a sister? Can you see God in a sinner? Can we see God in someone who committed a crime? You know, another funny story that happened in our conference, which I didn't tell our senior pastors about it. We were placed in a hotel. They said it's a 4-star hotel because every morning there is free breakfast, buffet, American breakfast. And there are 4 of us inside the room, okay? And the bed is like my the other pastor and another pastor, and this is my bed and another pastor. Okay, these 3 of us are from Iloilo City. 1 is from General Santos City. So, on that night, when we were entering the room, I was the last to enter. But when we opened the door, I tell you, I wanted to go out of the room because of the smell. Someone had smelly feet. Yes. It's good because we were in Hong Kong, Pastor. That's why it's Hong Kong feet. Smelly. When I went inside, I endured it. I really endured it. And then the pastor from Jensen, he said, "Pastor, when I came inside, there was already the smell." So he's pointing to the other two. And the other one said, "No, because I told them not to just let them feel fine." I said, "Maybe because for the whole day, our shoe, we didn't remove our feet from our shoes, so it stuck there for the whole day. That's why it has a smell. And this guy, he said, that's why in the conference, I removed my shoe. And later on, one of my friends told us that in that conference, so shameful, they opened the window because there was a smell. There was a smell. And this guy pointed to the other one. He said, it's you. You're the one who has, you have the Hong Kong feet, smelly feet. So every time we enter the room, this guy, the short one, he said, I will go in first. I will catch the rat first. He calls it the rat, dead rat. I will catch the rat first so that when you enter, there will be no smell. But actually, it's not him. One of the services, the third day of the conference, we were sitting in one line. My roommate, me, another pastor, which is not my roommate, and the fourth one was my roommate. So three of us roommates in one aisle. During the first service, I thank God I brought the bonnet because it was cold. Actually, for two purposes. I didn't know that the other purpose is, you know, God's grace for me. Because the first purpose is for the cold. When I entered the conference, I removed it because the temperature is regulated. I smelled something bad. So I concluded that it was him. I couldn't take the smell. I thank God I had a bonnet. The whole 1.5 hours, I used the bonnet. The bonnet should be on my head, but I use it here. I also didn't want to embarrass him, but I said, after the break at 9:30, when we go out, I will not return to that seat anymore. But then, what can I do? If I return there and he sees me, he will sit there. So I said, I will go in late. Not very late, but I must see first that he is already set there, and then I will come. So that's what I did. Am I delaying you? Alright. So that's what I did. I entered last, but the service has not yet started. And then suddenly, one of my seatmates, who is my roommate, asked, message, Pastor, where are you? Pastor, where are you? So I replied, I am here sitting at the back. And then he said, Pastor, you really saved yourself. You really saved yourself. And then the other guy, who is not our roommate, texted me, Pastor, you know, salvation is shared. So I replied, that's why I fully share it to you. They couldn't take the smell. This roommate of mine said, Pastor, no wonder you transferred seat because of the smell. I really couldn't take the smell. And it coincided. There are they put the places in China, okay? They put them on the screen. These are the places that they wanted to go in China. And it was a coincidence that one of the places is called Amoy. Smell. So when I saw it's Amoy, I texted him, see? The screen supports us, you know. There is Amoy. And on the second group, he texted me, look, Pastor, the second group is Panyo. And he took picture of his handkerchief and sent to me. So there was Amoy and there is Panyo. So that's the funny thing. Until we left, this guy still did not admit that his feet was smelly. So what should my reaction be? The next time we meet, should I remember him as the one who had Hong Kong feet? Or someone who still has the image of God in him? Second point, the shape of love. The shape of love. When you ask the children, what is the shape of love? They will reply, heart. The shape of love. You know, once we have found this great central truth in life, that we are loved by God now and forever, we can behave like the Good Samaritan and say, whatever is mine is God's, and whatever is God's belongs to my neighbor, because my neighbor belongs to him. The Good Samaritan is not trying to keep the rules. He is not even doing his duty. You'll be surprised. He was not keeping the rules. He was not even doing his duty. He is doing what is instinctive and natural because of who he is. When we do something good, brothers and sisters, it should be our instinct, our natural, not because of duty or rules. Scholars cannot agree on how much money he gave the innkeeper. Some say 2 weeks worth of boarding. Others say 2 months of boarding. The point is that he paid the innkeeper a considerable amount of his own money to take care of this unknown, injured man. Jesus says to us, love your neighbor as you love yourself. Love of self is instinctive and involuntary. If like for example, if you are in trouble, do you wonder if people help you or not? It's our instinct to always, you know, to always say, people will come and help me because I am in need. Am I correct? Like for example, when you are lining up on a buffet, do you surrender your place to someone? That's what happened in 2001 when we had the trip. The Singaporeans came here. They went to a restaurant and they were lining up. The line was so long. And then suddenly this Japanese, I think, came and cut queue. This Singaporean came, hey, why are you cutting queue? Get back in line. Get back in line. See? Why? Why we cannot give our place? Because it is instinct. It's natural for us to think about ourselves. You are entitled because you have been lining up so long and you are entitled of that position. Jesus says in the kingdom, that's how you love your neighbor. Okay? That's how you love your neighbor, as you love yourself. You feel that he or she is worthy and deserves preferential treatment. When there is love, there is no legalism. The lawyer asked Jesus the question, who is my neighbor? Who is my neighbor? That lawyer was actually trying to find a new rule, a new law. But there is no other rule, there is no other law above love. In the Good Samaritan story, Jesus indicates that the law of love puts an end to legalism. Love is above law. Love is above rules. We are simply to love one another as he loved us. If we love ourselves, we should apply that love to others. I give an example. A man was building a home on the mountains in a place where it's very difficult to get water. So he asked an old timer to come over and divine the source of water on his property with a stick. You know, we had this old way of finding the source of water. We had two sticks, and then we walk. And then when we feel that there is a pool, the water is there. Okay, so that's what he did, this man. So the old timer found a spot, and he said, "You just dig 14 feet straight down here, and you will find an underground river," he told the man. "When you hit the water, pump it every day." So the man followed the instructions and found the river. He pumped it out the first day, and more water came in. More water came in. In the next few days, the water rose to 4 feet, then 6 feet. But when the water reached 8 feet, he said, "It's enough." He left, because he was just trying to build a well or dig a well for his house. Returning to that place some months later, when the house was finished, he immediately turned on the water. The first day, there seemed to be plenty. But by the next day, there was none at all. The well was empty. In spite of his efforts to revive it, nothing happened. So the man ended up having to dig an artesian well at a cost of over 100,000 pesos. Much later, he went back to that old timer in town and told him that disappointing story. "Why there's no more water?" The old timer asked, "Did you pump it every day?" He said, "No." The old timer said, "You're foolish." He explained, "An underground river is made up of thousands of little capillaries running underground. As you pump the water, you enlarge those capillaries, and more water comes in. Once you stop, the water backs up, the capillaries close, and the river is formed somewhere else." In our life, Jesus is like that. As we give our time, our love, our money, the well is always filled. But when we begin to believe, "What is mine," somehow our lives dry up and we have lost the key to everything. The Samaritan. Someone wisely said that if we could read the secret history of our enemies, we would find in each enough sorrow and suffering to disarm all our hostility. It means we are sometimes hostile because we do not know that person. There is this guy in our group also. Frankly, I didn't like him. I didn't like him. Because of his behavior, because of the way he speaks, he talks, I really don't like him. But then, when I really personally talking to him in the trip, I slowly began to realize that he is like that because he went through something bad. He was like that because he was bullied in his workplace. He was like a muchacho, slugoon, helper, a slave. So I began to understand him. And who is the Samaritan? Who is the Samaritan, actually? He is the one who knew no sin, but who became sin. The Samaritan is actually Jesus, the greater, the better Samaritan. Jesus came to you and me. We have been beaten up because of our sin and stupidity, and had compassion on us. Each of us thinks our own sins are understandable many times, but the sins of others are preposterous, unacceptable, but not so with Jesus. He has compassion on us all. In verse 34, Jesus comes and gives oil and wine. Oil is a symbol of the Spirit, wine a symbol of blood. The Spirit provides power for success, the blood provision for failure. And again in verse 34, the Samaritan elevated the wounded traveler to the position he had enjoyed previously. Just as Jesus became a son of man, that we might become sons of God. And still in verse 34, where does Jesus take people who have been beat up or wounded? He deposits them in the care of the innkeeper. Every time we read this parable always share and talks about these people, the priest, the Levite, and the Samaritan. And we totally forget about the last person, the innkeeper. The innkeeper. This is a twist to our sharing this morning. Because the parable does not end with the good Samaritan. It continues with the work of the innkeeper. That will lead us to my third point, the soul that keeps. The soul that keeps. In chapter 10, same chapter in verse 35, the Bible tells us, after carrying him in the inn, the Samaritan said to the innkeeper, "Here is money to take care of this man. If you need more, I'll pay you back when I return." I want us to take note of this. The Samaritan did not say, "If I return." The Samaritan said, "When I return." It talks about assurance. He will return. And not only that, he paid more than enough. That is why he told the innkeeper, "If you need more," because he knew that he gave more than enough. The good Samaritan puts the man he saved from dying into the care of the innkeeper, and he paid the down payment. Not only did he pay the down payment, he also promised to return and pay in full. This puts the innkeeper in an interesting place. Now, who is the innkeeper? The innkeeper is the believers. The innkeeper is the individual believer. And as corporate, the church. Our good Samaritan Jesus put someone into your life, into the church. And he said, "I already paid the down payment, and my down payment is more than enough. And I will return to pay you back for what you have done." 2 pieces of silver, the 2 denarii, were a significant amount of money in that day. So if the innkeeper thinks that the Samaritan will not return, he could dump the traveler on the street and use the silver to remodel his inn. That's what some people do. They have been blessed by the Lord with money, jobs, resources, abilities, and talents. And what do they do with them? They use them for their own gain. Or the innkeeper could also say, "I'll take care of him until the 2 denarii run out. Then, whether he is healed or not, he is out of here. That could be the second thought of the innkeeper. A lot of us do this as well. We say, we'll use what you have given us, Lord, but don't ask us to extend ourselves in faith. I will do whatever you ask me to do, but there is no extension. We are not going to take on any new challenge or step into any new opportunity. We say, we will give you what you require, God, but once that is given, that's it. Because we are not completely sure whether you are coming to repay me or not. But I have good news. I have news for you this morning. Jesus is coming back. Innkeepers, brothers and sisters, you're listening here today. Based upon the word of God, I promise you that anything you have spent above and beyond the 2 denarii you have been given will be rewarded greatly. Not once in the next billion years to come will you regret that which you did not do for yourself because you cared for someone who was bent, who was beat up, for someone who was in need, for someone who need to grow in the ways of the Lord. You will never regret missing those opportunities for yourself just because you care for one, for another person. What we will regret is that which we did not spend because we were not living as though the Samaritan or Jesus was really coming back. In conclusion, the Lord has entrusted to us more than enough to take care of the half-dead people who come our way. The question is, will we release what He has given us? Or are we going to turn another way, or turn down the offer, or cross the other road? Provision has already been made for every area. Will we let it go? Will we make the time? Will we expend the energy? Or we will cross the other side? Fellow innkeepers, I trust we will say to our good Samaritan, Lord, you have already given me the gifts and the goods to care for whoever you send my way. Therefore, I will do whatever it takes, knowing you are repaying. The thief, the robbers on the bloody way, saw the traveler as a numbskull to attack. The priest and the Levite saw him as a nuisance to avoid. The Samaritan saw him as a neighbor to love. The innkeeper saw the wounded traveler as a soul to care. And the innkeeper saw the Samaritan as the Lord who will return with his reward one day. How do you see people? I was telling you this about this guy. I really didn't like him. In fact, in our group message, I say even some nasty things. But when I get to know him, I said, oh, I was wrong. This story challenges me, blesses me, and convicts me. May the Holy Spirit convict us for how we see others. Are we going to cross the other side? May we see God in a sinner, even in an enemy. Shall we just bow down our heads and close our eyes? I also believe that there are many of us here today. We want to be accepted. We want to be assured. brothers and sisters, whoever you are, for as long as we see God in you, which we do see God in you, please feel belonged. You belong to this church. You are not out. We will not cross to the other side and forget about you. But for many of us here today, we forget that we are the innkeepers. We keep those souls. And maybe we need to ask God to really open our eyes. We need the grace of God. As I needed the grace of God to try to understand, to try to accept people, my standard is not very high, but I still have standards. But I still want to see God in every person. We know that we can ill-treat people, we can despise people, we can just hurt people anyhow when we don't see God in them. Don't you know that? Will you hurt God? Will you despise God? Will you discriminate God? No. We discriminate, we despise people because we don't see God in them. But today, let us remember that it is also by the grace of God that the better Samaritan Jesus came. When we were beaten up, when we were so down, when we were half dead, He knew we were enemies. But He came to save us. He came to help us. When we remember that grace, why can't we give grace to others? When as an enemy of God, Jesus came to make us His friends, why can't we reach out to enemies and make them friends because we see the image of God in them? I'm not saying that you will be unequally yoked with them, but you just try to see God in them. Because when you see God in them, no matter what, there is hope in that man. There is hope in that person. But until and unless we get convicted, until and unless our hearts are changed, our vision, our perception is changed, nothing will happen. So today, we need the grace of God. Re-experience the grace of God. You just taste and see the goodness and the grace of God in our lives. Shall we all stand up?